T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
First of all, what's new and exciting this upcoming school year, and what's your biggest concern?
So new and exciting would be we have new curriculum at the high school level this year for literacy and math. We implemented new curriculum last year in a K-8, and overall that went well. It'll be important that our students at the high school level are exposed to grade level standards in 9th through 12th grade. That makes sure that they're more ready for college and the world of work, and we should see an impact, positive impact, on SAT scores. Excited about the new schools that we're offering next year. We have a Montessori program at Edmondson that'll be eventually K-8, but we're starting in grades pre-K to fourth grade. We are bringing back a neighborhood school at Barton. This was a school that was closed under emergency management that we're bringing back to improve just access to the community in that area. In addition to that, Davis Aerospace is moving back to the city airport. At least the ninth graders are going back into the city airport. So new schools, new
growth.
That's just listening to the community over the last 2 years. There's been a number of individuals that have come to the district and have been advocating for years for the program to go back to the airport. So that just made sense, and it was a commitment that I made early on because it made sense for students to be exposed to that curriculum on the airport. It just means that it's more relevant, and if you're, it's a legacy issue more than anything else, and it just makes sense that students should have never been removed from the city airport, and the city needs a thank you as well, because we wouldn't be able to do that without their support.
The new curriculum, how difficult is it to roll out a new curriculum for 9th through 12th grade?
Well, if we go back to last year, it was hard because our teachers were not necessarily used to teaching at grade level, and our students aren't used to being taught at grade level. So the transition won't be easy, but the transition wasn't last year, but we saw that most of our students showed at least a year's growth, especially our oldest students at the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade level in literacy and math. So it won't be an easy transition, but it's a necessary transition because that's what children deserve, to be exposed to at grade level curriculum. And so it'll be a transition, but it's something that's necessary.
Anything else you're excited about school year?
No, I'm excited about just the energy of our principals. I was able to spend a week with them last week at the Principal Academy, and I feel that we have a critical mass of principals that are excited to be in the district. They're hungry to continue to learn and grow with the curriculum and what students need to be successful. I think that they're ready to own student achievement at another level. And I think we're evolving as a district where we're not only talking about caring for children and advocating for children, but ensuring that they're learning. And I think that is something that's been new over the last decade since emergency management. So we have a critical mass of principals that I think are buying into where we're going as a district and are ready to lead that change at their individual schools.
I stopped by the academy. That was pretty impressive. And I had no idea that the principals worked 12 months a year.
Yeah, no, they've been.
I thought they had the summer off too.
No, they take some days off here or there, or a week off here or there, but they've been working hard staffing. So we should be under 100 vacancies this year. And so when we started this work 2 years ago, we had 275 vacancies. Then we went to about 160 to then 130, 150. So we're in a much better place this year. And we've hired over 1,000 more employees at the school level between teachers, deans, assistant principals, music teachers, art teachers. So we've actually hired more people and decreased our vacancies. And I think that's something that separates us from other schools in the city, where a lot of charter schools in the city continue to struggle to hire fully certified teachers. Many are operating with the majority of their staff being long-term subs that are not certified. So I think when parents really do their homework and visit our schools and understand what we're doing, they'll see a difference in our schools versus those in the city. And I think that's going to continue to lead to an increase in enrollment.
So 100% certified?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a commitment that we've made 2 years ago, that we would hire fully certified teachers and only fully certified teachers.
And they all have laptops now, right?
Yeah, we did that last year. Yep. They all have laptops. And we're implementing a new information system this year, so we should have better access to student information, run an analytics a bit better, and that will help us make decisions for children.
And all kids will have access to laptops or some sort of...
By the end of this year, all of our K-8s will be one-to-one, which means for every student there would be a laptop. So they don't keep their laptops throughout the day, or they don't take them home, not yet. We may start to pilot that this year. But at least all students have access to a laptop, and usually they have access to a lap cart through a laptop cart. So we move the carts around in literacy and math, and then they have access to them.
And the actual shortage now for teachers is what?
We're at about 100, only 100, and that's with, another 3 weeks of summer to go. So we should be down to only a couple dozen in key hard-to-staff areas like special education, math, and science at a secondary level, but we've done a much better job of filling our teacher vacancies.
Is that the lowest it's been?
Well, since I started, we were at 275 when I started, and I have no reason to believe that it wasn't even higher before that. And I think we're much more competitive than other schools within the city with hiring fully certified teachers. We've been able to recruit a lot of teachers from charter schools and surrounding districts because we recognize full experience, and we're doing a better job of just being competitive with salaries.
Third grade reading law, how concerned are you about that?
I'm just concerned that the legislature would continue to support a law that has not been supported by research or best practice. I think the law overall is more about being punitive against children than helping children that need more support. And there's no reason to believe that this law would not have a disproportionate impact on students growing up in poverty and students of color. I mean, we've seen that throughout the country, and the data says that. So I don't think that's even an assumption. We know that that's a reality based on the impact it's had on other in other states. With all that said, the Michigan Department of Education released the cut scores that would be applied for that third grade retention law, and I thought it was a fair determination that it would be the lower level achievement level on that test, so fewer students initially would be identified to be retained, because you don't have to be at or above grade level. Based on the third grade test, it's the lower level performance in third grade, so fewer students will be identified to be retained, and then there are exemptions that we will apply. So students that have an individual education plan or that are special needs children will be exempt. English language learners within the first 2 years of learning a language will be exempt. Students that were already who were already retained will be exempt. Then we can use our internal assessment, which is iReady, and if they have an equivalent score to what would have originally led them to be retained, that can be used. They can also have a portfolio that shows that they're at grade level. That can reduce the number of students retained. And then lastly, and probably most importantly, the parent or this teacher has to agree that they should be retained. So that if the parent doesn't agree or the teacher doesn't agree, then the child isn't retained. So we believe that if you apply all those exemptions that I just rattled off, that the number should be much lower than just using a standardized test score. So historically, we've retained about 3% of our third graders, and I think we'll be roughly around that, maybe a little higher once we apply the exemptions. But it's the wrong strategy when you think about improving literacy. We should be talking more about investing in early learning, investing in summer school, investing in teacher training, investing in additional personnel that can work with students below grade level. Our legislature continues to follow an ideological approach to education reform, not best practices or not just listening to practitioners that are actually working with children on a day-to-day basis. So I think that's the frustrating part, and it's creating a higher level of anxiety and stress among teachers and students and eventually parents, because people don't really understand even the exemptions of the law. They just hear this idea of their third graders being retained, and then students become fearful of school and fearful of testing, when it really should be about testing being used to understand how we support children, not how we penalize children.
Any chance that the governor might just do away with that law?
No, my understanding is the governor's not supportive of third grade retention, but she doesn't have the ability singularly to change that. I think she probably played an influence with the Michigan Department of Education to apply a lower analysis of the score, which would then prevent fewer students from being retained. So I'm sure she was influential in that sense, and so was the State Board of Education. I'm thankful that they applied a lower level score, because then we'd have more students that would have to jump through those exemption hoops that I talked about earlier. But at this point, I think that's the most she can do, considering it's in statute.
And given the criteria now, is there an estimate as to the number of students that could potentially be held back?
Yeah, so from the beginning, if you don't apply the exemption and you look at how students did the previous year on MSTEP in third grade, initially 20% of our third graders would be identified for retention. But I think after you apply the exemptions that I talked about, we would be back to about 5%, which again, historically, we've retained about 3% of our students. So we should be roughly around that point. But there would be 15% of students that would go through the exemption. And that's just undue pressure and stress that I think you're going to put on those students, the parents, and just the school system in general, who has to work through those exemptions. But we'll do that like we always do, because it's the right thing to do for students. But our time and energy should be spent on something different than working through a number of exemptions.
How many third graders last year?
Overall, we have roughly about about 5,000 students per grade, give or take. So then you're applying that 20% to that, and then the 5% to that.
Yeah. Okay. Let's read. Talk about what kind of a difference you anticipate that making.
So I think more than anything else, it's given the community a vehicle to get in to support our schools. I think people are feeling good about an elected board and appointed superintendent just bringing back a lot of the things that made sense in the past. And the community in general wanted to be more supportive of how they support the new school district and students. And I think Let's Read was a concrete way to get them more involved and to play a positive impact on students. So I think it just brought positive energy to the district and individual schools to directly help students. I think there's a lot of people in the community that want to see the district do better and continue to improve. But a lot of people say that, but now this is a way to actually do something concretely. And so I think it's been encouraging to see the number of people that have signed up. And I think this year in particular, we'll start to see the difference that it makes for those third graders who are working with a volunteer.
And what's the goal now? And I'll talk to Helen more, but the target for the number of volunteers you'd like to see?
Well, it's just continuing to get as many as we can. I don't think we should ever think of a certain cap. It's just there are hundreds of retired teachers out there. There are 100 of retirees. There are everyday people that are still working that could take off during lunch to work with our students. So as many as we can get can come in. They're welcomed, and we need them to work with our students.
Security, certainly an issue. There was an article on the front page of the paper today about, I think it was DeBralter, using facial recognition in schools. Anything new and different with the schools?
No, we're definitely not headed down that route. I can tell you that for sure.
The chief just went through. Right?
Well, I mean, beyond that, I would have told you that that's not something we would do.
Why not? Because
of the history linked to it. I mean, we our school should be about trust, and letting the community to come in and overcome the history of. I mean, I think Chief Godby's opportunity, and I think this is what makes him so perfect for the job, is to use DPSCD police in a way that challenges the original feelings that the community has about police, because our police officers get to play a direct, different kind of role with our students. Our police officers should think more about being like guidance counselors and social workers and teachers, and an opportunity to build trust with students to prevent issues and challenges. And I think Chief Godby has moved in that direction to try to get the officers more connected to our students, more in the community. So why I wouldn't walk down that route, because I just think it just furthers distrust between the community and the police, and that's the last thing that we need to do, especially when we're talking about our students who our officers have the opportunity to build the relationships with them because they're with them in a non-confrontational situation in schools. And that's something to build off of, not to erode. So that's why I wouldn't move in that direction. But I'm excited that this year we'll be hiring more full-time employees as security guards. So walking away from Securitas and expanding the opportunity for people to work full-time for the district as security guards, not police officers, but security guards. And we believe that that will lead principals to have more ownership in who they select. Those people that are hired are going to work for our district, hopefully over time, reduce turnover rate, which we've seen with contracted services. So that means that they're at work more often, they're in one building more consistently, they can build a relationship with the parents, with students, and that obviously reduces the opportunity for conflict because they can intervene faster because they have relationships with students and parents.
So the Securitas contract ended this past school year?
Yeah, every year we review the Securitas. At least we've done that for the last 2 years. So last year we piloted full-time security guards, meaning we hired the security guards in about 12 schools. And the feedback was positive from principals that they prefer to hire their own people. We also saw higher levels of retention, better, just lower absenteeism. And so that's something that we expanded now to 70 schools. So most of our schools will have full-time security guards rather than Securitas. We still use Securitas in a number of schools, but I think over time we'll move to full-time employment. And that's something that we've done. And for example, in IT, where most of our IT people were contracted out, and now we hire them full time. So this is just about rebuilding the district. And I just believe when people work full time with the district, they have more buy-in, they have more connection, and they just have their job is more meaningful than being on a contract and you're just sent to a school. Not to say that we don't have hardworking contractors. I just think it's different when you work with the district. There's more pride that comes with working with the district than being on a contract.
So IT is 100% back in house?
Almost. When I started, we only had about 8 people that were full-time employees that worked in IT. And we had about a $7 million contract or a group of contracts, and we've reduced that to about $1 million now. So I would say we're at about 80% of our IT being full-time rather than contracted out.
And what about security percentage?
For security guards, I would say that we're at probably 70% full-time in-house. That's off the top of my head, but I would say about 70%.
And in terms of these mass shootings, when I talked to some principals last week, they said it's one of the things that kind of keeps them up at night sometimes, worrying about keeping kids safe. What kind of things are you doing and the chief doing in that regard? Will there be certain types of training, at the start of the school year or what?
Right, and I've always said this, and I know this leads people to feel uncomfortable, but I think if any superintendent or any principal says that all of our children are safe from an active shooting situation, then they're lying. I think that we're living in a country today where people have easy access to automatic weapons, and that's something that this country has to deal with. And it's sad to say that, and it hurts me to say that, but we are so far behind other countries when we think about gun control the proper screening to even have access to a weapon, that for me to say as superintendent that our children will always be safe, I would be lying. And I think any superintendent that says that is lying, and I think any principal that says that also is just trying to give people a false sense of confidence. Now, with that said, I think that we've done everything that we can within the system to prepare our employees and our children for a worst-case scenario. So we have metal detectors in all of our schools. We have cameras in the majority of our schools. We're putting access security on all of our K-8 schools, so you can't get into the school unless you have a badge or you're buzzed in. We're going through active shooter training throughout the district. Our officers go through that, and we're conducting those exercises at individual schools. I also have security randomly visit all schools to check the perimeter of the school to make sure that all doors are locked, that the fences are secured. So we are doing everything in a proactive way to prepare for the worst case scenario, but I don't think based on what has happened in this country for some time, and it has really been accelerated over the last couple of years, that we can say that this will never happen. And my role is not to scare people, and that's the last thing that my role is about, but I also want to speak truth to where we are in this country, and people need to wake up in the legislature at the federal level. Our president needs to wake up, and we need to stop being beholden to the NRA and gun right advocates to realize that we need common sense legislation to actually protect our children and protect our citizens in this country with real gun control and gun legislation. It's shameful that as superintendent I have to speak this way about where we stand in this country, but we are far, far behind the majority of countries in this world, and it's a shame that we're having this conversation.
Yeah, when you look at the statistics, it's it bears that out.
Yeah, and other countries, even when they had a mass shooting situation, learned from that mass shooting and proactively and courageously moved forward with the legislation to try to curtail it, and it was curtailed. We are the anomaly that this continues to happen in our country, but yet the status quo reigns, and that needs to stop. And so if I can use my position and my voice as superintendent to do that, then that's my responsibility to do that, and that's why I'm doing this in this interview.
And given those two shootings, mass shootings, weekend before last, do you think things will change now?
No.
Will it be more no?
No.
Lip service.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that I say that, but I have been saying this even after the shooting in Florida. I said all we will continue to hear are our prayers and thoughts, and we'll hear misguided interpretations about mental health and the need for more security, and that's not the solution. It's not a mental health issue. I mean, in some of these cases, it is a mental health issue, but even if we're talking about a mental health issue, when you create an environment when people that are struggling with mental health issues have easy access to weapons, then it just increases the likelihood that it'll be used. So let's go to the root cause. The root cause is not mental health. The root cause is easy access to weapons. Weapons that actually are manufactured to create mass destruction. And that's what we're seeing in this country. We're seeing mass destruction, and we're seeing domestic terrorism because we're not willing to be courageous enough to stand in front of the NRA and other gun right advocates to say that we need common sense legislation to protect our citizens from these terrorist attacks and the mass destruction. And that's what we're seeing. These weapons are used in war to kill people at high rates. So why would an average citizen need access to this? And it's just shameful that we continue to hear lip service about change without change actually happening.
And common sense legislation in your mind would be
One, banning assault, any kind of assault weapons would be one. Proactive and thorough screening for anyone that has access to a weapon. Those would be two easy first steps in my mind to make sure that our schools are safer. But again, this isn't foreign. This isn't as if this is hard work. Other countries have done this. We're the anomaly, and this is why we see the rates that we do in this country of mass killings.
Art and music program.
Yes. So just to go back from it, it's just frustrating. And, you know, I've been very active on, at least on social media, just to say that it's just sick that you talk to students on a day-to-day basis, which I do, and they will all tell you that this is shameful, that we're still in this country without any change after all these killings. No change.
Frustrating.
So art and music. So this is a point of pride, I think, for our district to be able to say that all schools have an art or a music program. We've fully funded a music or art teacher in all schools. We've hired hundreds of music and art teachers. So this is a way to, I think, make a concrete difference in students' lives, to be able to go to school every day and have access and exposure to art and music. It's not only about knowing that our students are talented and in arts in general, and that exposure can lead to being an artist or a musician, but I think more importantly, it's about exposure to beauty. It's about exposure to understanding beauty, cultivating beauty, and protecting beauty. And I think it's clear that if you're exposed to the arts at a young age, you grow up as a citizen that protects beauty, supports beauty, protects the arts, is willing to use your taxpayer dollars to support museums and the funding of the arts and after-school programming. But that as a citizen, you're more active, you're a critical thinker. And I think all of those characteristics help you create a better society and a better world, and I think we've lost that in K-12 education. I believe that students should be tested so that we know where they stand and how we provide support, but we've lost the teaching of the whole child and the emphasis of the whole child in our school system, and I think that's one way we'll slowly bring students back to the school system, because they'll know that they'll be provided a strong education in the arts. Our vision is to not only expose all students to the arts, especially at the K-8 level, but to rebuild Detroit School of the Arts. Right now, it's only half full, and that school should be full. So we're going to try to rebuild the feeder patterns that go into DSA, Duke Ellington, Spain, J.R. King are all feeders to DSA. We're going to strengthen those feeder patterns. And then we're going to continue to emphasize our cultural passport program, which that allows every student from grades pre-K to fifth grade to having three cultural experiences where they go to the DIA, the music hall, the symphony, to the zoo. And this is just a way to make sure that they experience everything Detroit has to offer, and there are no socioeconomic barriers to that process. And that's also going to help just build an appreciation for academics beyond a standardized test.
Attendance, how is the district faring as it relates to getting kids to come to school?
Yeah, so this past year, excited to say that we reduced chronic absenteeism by 10 percentage points. So we went from 74% of our students being chronically absent to 64%. That was due to putting attendance agents at every school so that they could do home visits and follow up with students that were chronically absent, meet with parents at their homes or at school. We also just monitored the data more and were more aware of students that were on the pathway to being chronically absent and intervened stronger. So I think as the years go, our chronic absenteeism will continue to decline. We're piloting a program where we're going to put vans at certain schools, at three schools, to do to pick up students after the regular pickup time and through the outside of the regular school bus situation, because we know we have to go deeper with some students and families to get students to come to school every day. And I think that pilot will allow us to better understand whether we expand that initiative across the district or at more schools that have higher concentrations of chronic absenteeism. But we're doing everything we can as a district to overcome the barriers that we know that our students and our parents face regarding absenteeism.
Still high, though.
It is, and we know that there are factors specific to Detroit linked to socioeconomic background, just the daily challenges that our parents often have with carrying multiple jobs, often being evicted from where they live, having children move in with other relatives in order to make ends meet. All that contributes to chronic absenteeism. But I think we've done a better job of the district of offering a curriculum that's more engaging, more relevant for students. Our surveys show that students feel more connected to our teachers than they did even last year. So all of that's going to create a culture where students are more excited about going to school and even push their parents to get to school more often. But we're going to continue to overcome all the barriers that exist as to why children aren't coming to school. I think we're starting to do that, and we'll continue to improve as a school system and creating a culture where students want to go to school despite the challenges that are happening at home. The challenges at home we can't completely solve, but we can create more welcoming environments where students wake up on fire and want to go to school because they're excited to see their teacher, to see their siblings, to engage in everyday work. I think that's gotten a lot better, and it'll continue to improve. There always will be that ceiling, but as we just problem solve through vans, more resources in the community with after-school programming, more outreach with our parents in general, then we'll even go through that ceiling, and that's the work that we do as a district.
All right, Marygrove, got 120 students over there.
Right.
What's going on?
Another new school that I didn't mention in the opening, but it'll be. I often drive by Marygrove, and every time I drive by, I get goosebumps thinking that students are going to be on that campus, and it'll be exciting to think of our students as high schoolers and eventually as pre-K students and kindergarten students to be on a college campus like Marygrove. I think we often talk about creating a college-going culture and preparing our students for life in general, college, and the world of work. But I don't think there's a better way to signal the students what they're capable of than actually being on a college campus. And I think in the years to come, we'll drive by the Marygrove campus, and that campus again will be alive with young people just walking the campus, going from class to class. And I think it'll be a point of pride for Detroiters to see that campus alive again and students to be on that campus. And then a point of pride to see the University of Michigan playing an active role in the city. You know, it's one thing to support after-school programming or programming at various schools. It's another to put your attach your name to a school and to put future teachers on that campus and eventually future social workers and psychologists on that campus to just build a pipeline for DPSCD in the years to come. So I'm very proud of the work that our staff has done to get that school up and running, but also to University of Michigan, especially the Kresge. There were lots of charter schools and private schools that could have had that opportunity, and Kresge said, no, it's going to be DPSCD because we believe in traditional public education, and they didn't have to do that. And I think they've sent a signal to a lot of philanthropers throughout the city that the district is back and it's time to invest in the district. And I think that has already generated more funding and interest and just credibility with the reform over the last 2 years.
And the focus of that particular school will be?
So the focus overall is engineering, because obviously that's what Michigan is known for, and it'll help our branding in DPSCD in general, but especially at Marygrove. But it's not just your traditional engineering; it's engineering with a social justice lens. So we're looking to develop the next generation of engineers, but engineers that are that have a social justice understanding and consciousness, so that after they go to college or they go to graduate school, that they come back to Detroit and they think about how to contribute to building and rebuilding a stronger Detroit. And so that's along with engineering, it's the social justice theme, which is linked to leadership. I mean, that's really what it is. It's active leadership in the area of engineering and social justice.
Dual enrollment, and we're almost there. dual enrollment in college career.
Yeah, so
Career Academy.
Yeah, so this year we'll start to incorporate a Career Academy at every high school. And so people, when they think about Career Academy, they often think about career technical education or VOTEC, and we've really strengthened our programs at Go Lightly, Bright Haught, and Randolph in that area. But career academies can expand beyond that. So we're building career academies focused on sports medicine, sports marketing, on pharmaceutical areas, nursing, engineering, like we just spoke about from Marygrove. So any careers that are out there, and we've done a good job of working with the Detroit workforce group to find out what are the jobs of now and the jobs of the future. And obviously those are related to STEM, in particular science, technology, engineering, and math. So what we're doing is building career academies at each of our high school focused on these jobs of now and the future, so our students can gain exposure in high school to be well prepared to earn those jobs and take those jobs after high school or after they go to college. Now, it doesn't mean that if they're in a culinary arts program that they have to become a chef. It just means that they can be exposed to it in high school and then either take on that job right after high school or go to college, get an associate's degree, get a bachelor's degree. But more importantly, we want high school to be relevant. And a lot of our high school students find high school irrelevant. And I think the career academies will make them more relevant and build their confidence and exposure to everyday real life in the business community. And so we envision expanding internships in the summer, internships during the school year, teachers going to businesses to understand what they're doing, businesses coming to our schools to talk to our students, having shadowing opportunities. And so this is, again, about making our high schools relevant. It's making them springboards to college or the world of work. And dual enrollment is going to be a feature of these career academies so that students can also take college courses through mainly Wayne County Community College, but we're expecting to expand our partnerships with Detroit Mercy, with Wayne State, University of Michigan, as we talked about for Marygrove, and other colleges so that students can gain college credit in high school, which allows them to reduce tuition in college, but also to accelerate the movement to getting a college degree, because they'll go into college with college credit. And then lastly, it makes them college ready. You know, if a student's thinking, am I really college material? Can I really do college work? If you're taking a college class in your junior and senior year and you pass, you don't have to question whether you're college ready. You know you are, because you passed that class. So excited about this reform at the high school level, because I think our next phase of reform is making the high schools more relevant to our students.
And these academies are inside the school.
Yes, right. Yeah, so they could be exposed to them their freshman and sophomore year in high school, but really start to take those classes their junior and senior year. But those classes are offered at the high school with our full-time teachers. We do partner with the universities to sometimes have the dual enrollment classes taken at the college campus, but I think that's going to move more to the high school campus with accrediting our high school teachers.
All right. And final question. So what keeps you up at night when you think about this job?
Well, the untapped potential of our students. I mean, I am obsessed with the idea that every one of our students reaching their God-given potential and talent, and we're not doing that. And I won't rest, and I won't feel accomplished until that happens. And that is a high goal, but that's what this is about. That's what I get paid to do. So I lose sleep about the fact that all of our students aren't going to school inspired yet. They're not all going to school feeling like what they're interested in, the school district is honing and developing. And I know that you can't do that in 2 years. I think we've made progress in that in 2 years, but that's what I stay up at night about, is constantly thinking about how we improve everything in the district, from transportation to curriculum to staffing, to culture to discipline. And it's about just being committed to perfection and a continuous improvement model, because that's what our children deserve, and that's what the taxpayers' dollars go to, is to fund a public school system that allows students to reach their God-given talent, regardless of their zip code and regardless of what's happening in their home. They should be able to go to school and feel inspired and encouraged and developed to reach their God-given talent. And we're not doing that yet for every student. We're doing a better job of it, and I feel like that's factual over the last 2 years, but we're not there yet, so I don't sleep soundly until that happens.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.